I think pretty much Aganais has been inviting me, and I would like to talk about Hall effects and quantum phasons in manganites. And this is the recent work which is done in collaboration of experimental and theoretical group, and my co-authors are Paul Goldberg, Myron Solomon, and Sien-Hyun Chan. The central themes of my talk would be, I will start first discussion of transport properties of manganites, and we will see that in order to describe, it is probably the most important thing would be to have a kind of hopping model leading to percolation. I will then take the vantage point afforded by the Hall effect and look at transport properties from this viewpoint. And we will see that that there exist two actually Hall effects. One is normal and another is anomalous. And as the hopping transport would be important, we would have to solve the problem of anomalous Hall effect in hopping regime. And in order to do this, I would consider quantum phases and one particular type of it, the Pancharatnam geometric phase. I will consider triads of magnetic ions where this phase arises. Then I will consider anomalous Hall effect in such a triad. We'll then see that in order to get a macroscopic anomalous Hall effect, one needs to take into account spin-orbit interactions and various effects of them. And furthermore, we will then consider how these triads are combined in a conducting network, and we'll see that actually theoretical model would lead some prediction to some prediction of universal dependence on of the resistivity and of the Hall effect on magnetic field and temperature, but this dependence would enter only as a function of magnetization. And we'll see then what experiment tells us about this dependence. Here is the famous picture of resistivity in manganites. This is a lead doped sample, and this is 0.3 doping by lead. And we see actually that there are three regimes in resistivity. The first one is clearly metallic. There is a high temperature, which is insulating regime, and it's an insulating kind of semiconductor type behavior. And then there is a transitional regime. In our work, there were the measurements of simultaneous resistivity and magnetization we take. Now I would like to ask a question. You see, according to all standards, this sample, that the sample, is quite, actually its resistivity here is around 1 million centimeter. And I would like to ask a question, whether it's a high resistivity or low resistivity. And let's make a simple estimate. Suppose we have bent electrons, and so we have metallic regime, we have electrons with a wave vector k scattered to the states with wave vector k prime by some magnetic fluctuations, impurities, whatever. And let's estimate the characteristic relaxation time in this model. Well, the electrons are accelerated by electric field, they are scattered, we have a traditional Drude formula, which was actually discovered exactly a century ago. And what we will get from this is that tau is approximately 10 to minus 15 seconds. And if we then will compute the corresponding broadening, we will get 0.65 electron volts. And that is a disaster for this estimate, because our sample turned out to be below Motyoff-Arago limit. I'm not discussing this limit, but I would like just to say that actually it means that the mean free path becomes smaller mean free path than the wavelengths of electrons. And there is no way that one can consider conductance as metallic. If it is a metal, it's a very bad metal. So the question arises what to do. And well, this is a situation very similar for many doped insulators and for high TC in particular. So, what to do? Let's take and try the opposite way to estimate the conductivity. And let's imagine that we have hopping between magnetic ions, separated by distance A in electric field, and due to the presence of electric field, the hopping back and forth is disbalanced. And we can derive by Cooper formula, by Green function formalism, a very simple equation. The current density is charge times the concentration times the probability of hop. This is the probability which should include this balance of hopping back and forth and just this constant between them. And then actually a simple estimate would give us the following equation for current density. We then take the same concentration, the same resistivity, and we arrive at the fact that the attempt frequency, which could be phonon, magnon, or any inelastic agent, is 2.5 times 10 to 13. And this is a characteristic frequency for many semiconductors, magnetic materials. This is a remarkable estimate. That's very tempting to say that indeed we have a kind of hopping conductivity. But the question is, of course, it is a simple estimate, and whether we can say something of more substantial arguments to this point of view. N is the concentration, is the nominal concentration of holes in this particular system. So it's 0.3 doping. Of course, the starting point is double exchange model. Going back to Zener and Anderson Hasegawa, and we have a hopping which is due to Hund's rule, the effective hopping amplitude is reduced, and this is the energy we see that the effective energy bandwidth is actually also T cosine theta between these two classical spins. And so this is a famous picture, but where we go next, and how would we get hopping now? So there's $1,000 question: why metal insulator transition and to paramagnet transition occurs in manganate? And I will start with this very little discussion of whether polarons are important. Polarons definitely can lead to hopping. So that was proposed by Millis, Littlewood, and Shriman in a paper which caused a dramatic increase of interest into manganites. And they proposed that the polaron band, due to the polaron effect, the band shrinks, and this leads to localization. Let me present you an experimental data. Polaron hopping has dramatic consequences for transport characteristics. In a high temperature region, we actually must have certain exponential dependence of resistivity both for Hall effect and for resistivity. Moreover, there are certain correspondence between Hall effect and resistivity exponents, and there is so-called dramatic one-third. And what we'll see here, this is the region of high temperatures, it's inverse temperature here. And this region above approximately 350 is very well described by polaron picture, but the transition temperature is 270 Kelvin. And we will see that actually that the whole transitional regime, which is actually, I would say, the transitional regime is the whole regime in which there is colossal magnet resistance, is outside the scope of the polaron picture. It must be something else that leads to localization. What else could lead to localization? Let's consider sources of disorder in manganite. Obviously, disorder is magnetic, but there are two types of this disorder. One naturally are spin waves, but this is very short-lived excitation. Another is the long-lived topological excitations, because they are topological, they are long-lived. Of course, there are could be some other fluctuations, but there was actually the very good paper by Lau and Dasgupta, who actually modeled the ferromagnet to paramagnet transition in three dimensions, and they got very strange result. It would be not strange in 2D. They told their result actually that without topological long length excitation, there is no transition. This would be surely true for Coster-Lizard transition in 2D. But there, Metropolis Monte Carlo shows that it is to some extent valid even in 3D. Apart from that, from magnetic disorder, there is non-magnetic disorder as well. And our doping is 0.3, and we substitute lanthanum for calcium, for lead, for strontium. And, well, there is simply substitutional static disorder. And it could also lead to a kind of localization. I would like to mention that actually localization approach to metal insulate transition in manganese has been done by several authors, and particularly by Varma and by Texas group. But I would like to make a few additional remarks. The story is that this topological long-lived excitation leads to the following very nice picture. So, polarons are not necessary. And we have random hopping between magnetic sites. And among two models of meta-insulated transitions, we actually have a kind of mixture of two models. One is Lipschitz model, and another is Anderson model. In Anderson model, there is a distribution of energies, and energies on sites are random. In Lipschitz model, the quantum wells or sites are identical. All of them are identical. But the distance between sites is random, and therefore transfer integral is random. What is the situation in manganese? We have identical magnetic ions. We have identical distance, but spin orientations are random, and therefore transfer integral is random. And therefore, magnets are actually in the same class of universality as Lipschitz model if to consider just magnetic disorder. Of course, if we have non-magnetic static disorder, it's an admixture of Anderson transition. Just a few more words about localization in Lipschitz model. Actually, Lipschitz showed that in a very simple consideration, that if one considers these random sites, then actually all sites are separated in two groups. And one group are isolated sites, which have no counterpart. Another group are resonant sites, and there could be just two resonant sites. So just two resonant sites, but the wave functions, there is an asymmetric and anti-symmetric combination. And, well, we would have three resonant sites if the distances between all wells would be identical. But due to randomness, the probability of such an event is vanishingly small. Well, and then actually one can show that these problems with manganese and with Lipschitz model with randomly spaced sites are almost identical. And one more thing, the important Lipschitz model is very tricky. The transfer integral is of the same order as the shift of energy when we diagonalize Hamiltonian, a random Hamiltonian in this case. And there is no obvious parameter, in contrast to Anderson model, where there is obvious parameter that the transfer integral and the width of the distribution of energies. However, in Lipschitz model, if the spread of the wave function for a single site is much less than the distance between sites, then localization effect arises.
And
sorry? The spins are frozen in time because what simultaneously occurs in the system is a localization transition and ferromagnet to paramagnet transition. As you know from double exchange model. So the hopping is promoted by parallel spins. But parallel spins in turn are promoted by hopping. They are promoted by hopping. And if there is no delocalized states, spins acquire actually random positions, random orientations. Let's take an instantaneous picture. Among those, of course, are spin waves, but also these topological excitations are present. I would prefer to move and if possible to ask questions.
Let a speaker talk and in the end we can ask questions.
Okay. So now back to transponder mind glides. And what would the picture, what would be the picture that emerges? This is a metal where all spins are parallel and therefore all resistances, all transfer integrals are the same. This is a periodic system. We have a crystal. But let's do the following. Let's consider each bond as a resistance. And, the more the magnetic disorder is, some of the bonds, especially between opposite spins, become broken because they no longer conduct. And the resistivity was obviously inverse proportional to the cosine between angles between two classical spins. And we have Hopping model, which is we have occupied sides below the Fermi level, we have occupied sides above the Fermi level. In addition, of course, somewhere here we have this shrinked conduction band. But our states actually fall into the tail of these states that are below the conduction band. And actually, in addition, of course, one might include interactions to promote this localization, but I would just say that, these arguments that Lifshitz and Anderson pictures combined lead to localization allows us to consider this Hopping model, which is, as I just said 5 minutes ago, is remarkably supported by the estimate of conductance. Let's take now the vantage point afforded by the Hall effect. And here is the Hall effect data in calcium doped sample. This is the same 0.3 doping. And we see something very strange. At low temperatures, we are in metallic regime. And we really have positive, we have holes. Therefore, the Hall effect is positive. We have linear effect in the dependence of the Hall conductivity with magnetic field. Perfect. However, at 140K and 200K, when we become closer and closer to this transitional regime, we see something very strange. The Hall effect changes sign. However, then it continues to have the same slope. So what is it? How could we explain that? Well, at 10K, we obviously have normal Hall effect in metallic regime. But it is very well known that on ferromagnets, in addition to the normal Hall effect, which is just a consequence of the Lorentz force in the metallic regime, or we'll talk in 5 minutes what is the consequence of the Hall effect in the Hopping regime, there is additional anomalous Hall effect caused by spin orbit interactions, and the cause could be, for instance, the asymmetric scattering of the carrier flux to right and left of the impurity. And so, as a result, one has the following expression for resistivity. The resistivity is the sum of the normal, ordinary Hall effect and anomalous Hall effect. And this anomalous Hall effect cannot appear if there is no magnetization of some sort. In monodynamics, of course, the magnetization is due to magnetized ions. It could be other cases when magnetization could be due to circularly polarized light, but let's just restrict ourselves to this particular picture. Anomalous Hall effect has a long, long story. The remarkable papers are in the end of 50s and beginning of 50s by Lattinger. Then there was contributions by Maranzana, Berger, Nagier. So recently, due to interest in manganates and the appearance of Hall effect experiments in manganates, Bell Labs group, Miller, Schreimann and co-workers also considered the anomalous Hall effect in metallic regime. Here I consider the anomalous Hall effect in hopping regime. And these are two our works, theory and experimental part. Before going to the anomalous Hall effect in the hopping regime, I must consider the ordinary Hall effect in the hopping regime. What is it? This problem was also considered in very early 60s by Holstein, and there were, during recent decade, there were two important contributions from Leningrad group and Antin Bondman, Aronov, Imre and Levinson. And the main idea of the normal Hall effect, ordinary Hall effect in the Hopping regime is the following. One has a triad of states. For this particular case, it's not important whether they are magnetic or not. And there is an interference of hopping processes. There is a direct hopping process and indirect hopping processes via intermediate sites. Well, and it is a tricky thing to get the Hall effect, to get this phase as an interference. One needs, for example, two inelastic agents, say two phonons, and here is the diagram for the probability, here is the diagram for amplitude. What is important in order to keep the possibility of interference in this inelastic hopping, one needs the same phonons to participate in direct and indirect amplitude. In contrast, the usual conductivity so is just one phonon process, and that's fine. But it has important consequences that the Hall effect, ordinary Hall effect, requires two inelastic agents. Now, we considered ordinary Hall effect in the hopping regime. We are going to consider now the anomalous hopping effect in the hopping regime. And in the previous talk, Dr. Mayakawa told us that actually this cosine half angle between two spins, which characterizes the hopping amplitude, is not the whole story. Andersen, Hasegawa, and Zinner, they actually simplified the picture a bit. If we would take more general point of view and to characterize our spins by polar and angle phi and azimuthal angle theta, then our random hopping amplitude in the double exchange renormalized hopping amplitude would look like the following. Only if we take one spin along z direction and another spin along x direction, we would get this phase zero, and the rest of the expression would lead us to cosine half angle, so between spins. For two spins, for pair hops, this additional amplitude has no consequences at all. But let's look what would be in a triad. Because we won't get any Hall effect in a pair, it is known since beginning of 60s. We need to consider a triad in order to obtain the Hall effect in the insulating regime. Let us consider the triad of magnetic ions. And again, we consider hops, direct hop from site 1 to 3, and from site 1 to 2, and indirect hopping process from site 1 to 2 via the intermediate site 3. Actually, the phase difference would be given exactly by the same phase which would be accrued by electron when it traverses the whole loop, starting at site 1 and returning to site 1. And we can look at the sphere of unit orientations. And we will see that actually we have clearly, we can put two spins in z direction and x direction, but the third spin would be characterized already by the polar angle phi. And actually one just considers the probability of hopping around the loop. And due to the constraint that high energy stays due to infinite Hund rule constant is high state are inaccessible, actually one every time projects these amplitudes are actually characterized by the product of the projection operators on the given spin orientations, and this amplitude is complex, and actually it is characterized by Pontryagin charge, which is actually the volume of the parallelepiped built on three spins, or also one can say that it is proportional to the solid angle. Of course, many of you are familiar with Barre phase, and this looks like Barre phase. And actually, it was considered perhaps first in high-temperature superconductors by Nagaosa and Lee. They considered this hopping in the system of disordered spins. But it is interesting to mention that actually the physical origin of this phase is slightly different. And it's actually not a Barre phase, it's Pancharatnam phase. I will just pause a little bit to say what is it. And this fact was actually discovered by Barre himself, who underlined the difference between Barre's and Pancharatnam phase. What Pancharatnam phase is? Let's consider an interference of experiment with light waves. You have polarized light, and the polarized beam is split, and then we pass through two nickels which change polarization of light, and then consider the interference of waves. And it turns out that if we would consider a Poincaré sphere of light polarization, if light propagates from north to south pole, then the south pole would be left circular polarized light, the north pole would be the right circular polarized light, and all linear polarizations would lie on the equator. And basically this interference, again, these are three polarizations of beams 1, 2, and 3, and they lying on the unit sphere of spin polarizations, and the resulting interference is given by this Pancharatnam phase. I have just shown you that there is an untrivial flux, an untrivial geometric phase in a triad of magnetic ions. We already know that in the ordinary Hall effect in the Hopping regime, Aharonov-Bohm flux leads to the appearance of the effect. So, in the anomalous Hall effect, we don't have any Aharonov-Bohm flux, but instead we have this Pancharatnam flux. And as a consequence, the anomalous Hall effect arises in the Hopping regime. There is, unfortunately, one great difficulty. Namely, in a system of spins, only total magnetization is fixed. Let's imagine that we fix this total magnetization for a triad and consider two situations. Spins S1 in these two situations are the same, while spins S3 and S2 are interchanged in a cycle. And in contrast to the ordinary Hall effect considered by Holstein, it turns out that these two triads would cancel each other. Because despite magnetization is the same, this non-trivial flux is opposite. And in a macroscopic sample, we can always find both considerations. There is no preferential consideration. So, what to do? But of course, the anomalous Hall effect which arises due to spin orbit interaction gives us the answer immediately. We must consider spin orbit interactions. And the simple model, we can consider spin orbit interaction and triad, and consider the expression for the energy, and we will immediately find there is a spin orbit interaction contribution. What does spin orbit interaction lead to? For a given orientation of spins, spin orbit interaction prefers one sense of motion to another, and thus favors one Pancharatnam flux over another. And it creates a bias in distribution of Pancharatnam fluxes. And actually it creates this bias by two means. Of course, first of all, the probabilities do depend on energies, and therefore we can just consider corrections of energies in the electronic sector. But more than that, we actually have the probability of these non-trivial topological excitations. And we know that that fast system electrons and potential in this system, which is given by spin-orbit interaction, it provides a feedback onto the slow system of spins. And therefore, another bias is created in the distribution of fluxes. And then we can easily get two contributions in the anomalous Hall effect from these two biases. And actually, for the triad, for given even the possibility of cancellation without spin-orbit interaction, our problem would be solved. However, that is not the whole story, because we don't have a single triad ensemble. We have a whole bunch of atoms, of ions, and we need to average somehow. What to do, and let's try to consider what triads are important in conducting network. And one can view conducting network perhaps in the following way, that there are some regions in which spins are oriented. There are some regions in which spins are oriented in the opposite direction. But in between, in order to have any conductance and any Hall effect, one has to have some links between those two. And perhaps the optimal, we have a whole set, the whole network. And among those, there will be some optimal triads, which would work as a source of electromagnetic Hall force. And that would provide us the Hall effect. Now, I have told you that actually the Hall conductivity requires two phonons. The ordinary conductivity requires just one phonon. And that leads to important consequences. Let's consider the Hall resistivity. And the Hall resistivity is the ratio of the Hall conductivity and the Hall, the longitudinal conductivity squared. Two phonons here, one phonon squared here, all phonon constant cancel. Now, if we consider that there is this triad should be maximal, in order to be the effective source of the Hall effect, it should be maximally splayed, probably. And the characteristic splay angle is given just by magnetization. And then one consider averaging in this whole conducting network, using that these optimal triads are perhaps very effective sources and give a leading contribution to the anomalous Hall effect. And here we have Pendragon charges, and here we have spin-orbit interaction. It turns out for simple cases, it has Dzelashinsky-Maria form for these triads of ions. And then one includes also that there is a macroscopic magnetization in the system, and one arrives for the following expression, where M is the characteristic cosine between spin and the orientation of average magnetization. In addition to that, because the Hopping conductance, longitudinal Hopping conductance, also depends on this orientation of spins on sites between which the hops are occurring. Actually, the Hall resistivity turns out to have the following form. And you know, all temperature-dependent constants from phonons drop out from this expression. This depends only on magnetization. Magnetization, of course, depends on temperature and magnetic field. Let's try to fit resistivity by this expression. And here what we get. These colored points are the whole resistivity depending on magnetization at various temperatures and magnetic field. And the black curve is just the curve that I just showed you, the dependence of the Hall resistivity on saturation magnetization. We see that actually this region is the region of small magnetization. This is insulating region. This region, well, there is a certain deviation from this curve, of the theoretical curve from the experimental curve, but these deviations should be present because actually somewhere here we no longer have the localization regime, we no longer have Hopping. we move towards metallic HM. So that was the adult sample. We actually have a similar situation for calcium dose sample. Okay. And well, we make an assumption that we have Hopping conductivity, so that we see that we needed to explain the anomalous Hall effect, and we predicted some form of the anomalous Hall effect depending on magnetization. And for three classes of samples, this surprisingly well fits. And I would like to conclude that probably this means that percolation model of the metal in the lighter transition of manganese works. That the microscopic theory of the anomalous Hall effect probably has a good chance to be true. And actually that we've made the prediction and observed the universal dependence of Hall resistivity on magnetization. So it depends only on magnetization, and it depends on magnetic field and temperature only via the function of magnetization. And finally, these are room temperatures. And we surprisingly have that the quantum phases explain physics of this high temperature regime. Thank you very much for your attention.
Is the prediction for the sigma XX as good as the
I would say the following. The prediction for sigma XX and sigma XY separately are working well there. As you know, it depends. If you consider isolated triad, it works not so well. Now, there are apparently some factors which connect isolated triads for with the whole conducting network. But actually it's interesting that in certain models these factors can cancel due to the same cancellation as the phonon or inelastic agent constant cancel out. Well, but the ratio of two works remarkably well. It's actually it's the same story as in the Hall effect in metal. We know that the, let's consider the Hall effect in metal. We know that it is due to Lorentz force, and therefore the Hall angle is proportional to relaxation time. Another relaxation time in the numerator of the conductivity arises from mobility. Due to the nature of the Lorentz force, we have 1 plus omega cyclotron tau squared in the denominator. In high magnetic fields, we know that taus are canceling out. In other words, in high magnetic fields, the Hall effect has non-dissipative nature. So it's just due to drift of electrons. And remarkably, absolutely the same story holds for the, in the Hopping regime. Constants like here, no, we have no relaxation times, we have inverse hops of the Hopping probabilities, but they also cancel out.
Why does the model work better? Small magnetization?
Because small magnetization in insulating regime. We have not an insulating, it's in transitional regime closer to insulating one. At high magnetization, we're actually in the regime where metallic conductivity should work. We actually have some model for this as well. In a sense, one need not consider denominator in this case, but asymmetric probability of scattering due to Berry fluxes, so due to Pancharatnam fluxes, actually is characterized just by numerator. And one can actually see that the whole curve would move towards the metallic regime.
Thermal equilibrium, your model will not contribute to the magnetization
itself? No, in thermal equilibrium, there will be no difference between direct and opposite hops back and forth. And therefore, there will be a cancellation of naturally, because it will be a balance, detailed balance, actually.
One going back to a question which was asked during your talk. At the beginning, when you were showing this model of disorder, please, I'm just trying to check it, understand it right, that you consider the system local as being disordered by temperature, right?
Yes, a double exchange model. Yes.
And then you treat them diabatically.
Yes.
And that's just a way to compute resistivity due to electron magnetic scattering in a way.
Yes. Excuse me, I won't come close.
Would you care to predict what would happen in two dimensions? Anything qualitatively different expected?
Well, in two dimensions, of course, first of all, the role of these topological excitations would be greatly enhanced. This is a plus. The question of how ferromagnetism works in two dimensions. So, in principle, there are manganites which are, you know, layered manganites.
Okay.
And we actually expect that, and the currently experiments are going on, that this model would work even better.
What does that mean? Do you have a prediction?
Well,
work better, but
you know, in basically, I would say that in two dimensions, at low temperatures, we may expect, due to localization in two dimensions, we may expect a similar behavior. Because carriers will be localized by low temperatures, and then we would see something like that.
So, without this static frozen disorder, that's the spin this lift-type thing. So, about TC, what kind of conductivity, temperature-dependent conductivity you got?
Well, the picture would be like that. You know, if suppose we start from this region of bad metal right below the transition. That is, let me say it vice versa. Let's take the high temperature regime, and we actually, as we increase the temperature, the resistivity increases. In the Hopping model, it's a quite natural picture. If we suppose that actually the characteristic clusters are just unit cells in manganites, then the only thing which might happen with the variation of temperature is we increase the frequency of hops. And therefore, the resistivity increases. It increases simultaneously, magnetic disorder becomes smaller and smaller and smaller. And at some stage, our clusters are actually start to be connected. They appear to be percolation channels. I would emphasize that percolation channels are not metallic channels yet. And the maximal resistivity would probably occur at the point where is one infinite, very tiny conducting network. As we decrease the temperature further, what actually happens, the density of this network abruptly grows as an usual percolation picture. And the resistivity will continue to drop. It will continue to drop until that very moment when what would happen is the previously existing resistances in conducting network will start to shunt newly appearing resistances and percolating paths. And at this point, everything would stop except magnetic disorder continues to decrease. And then localized states disappear, and we actually move the whole bunch of holes which conduct into the conduction band. And at this point, we get real metallic conductance and very nice picture. Of course, this is a scenario which is very difficult to formalize. But, well, according to the Hall effect, it looks quite nicely. I don't know, you know, maybe there are some other reasons it could be well be, but this whole effect curve is quite surprising. We didn't expect it ourselves.
So that's a roughly temperature dependence below and above TC in Lanfranc Schwenson system that
yes.
Is more or less consistent with the
imagine Lanfranc Schwenson system. First of all, the whole curve works there remarkably well as well. Secondly, unfortunately, I tried to find it, but I didn't find it. So, secondly, this picture that the resistivity above the transition would fall down would hold only if the characteristic localization length on the top of the resistance curve would be equal or to one lattice constant in the sense of magnetic sublattice. If it is bigger, well, we can continue to grow. Actually, it would be a competition of two processes. One is the increasing attempt frequency of inelastic agents. Another is, try to continue to localize. Well, I don't know. Maybe it works, maybe not. But this is a plausible scenario.
So you won't get localization right as a transition. Because first of all, you would have the cross-temperature effect would be that your spin disorder would become less and less correlated.
That would be true. That would be. I would absolutely agree with you if I would have only magnetic disorder. But as I told you, in addition, every third ion there is a substitutional disorder.
But your snapshot is entirely disordered at the moment. That's true only for very high temperature, first of all.
It's not even clear whether the dynamic. But then it should be dynamic.
Yes, of course, there is a dynamic. But you know, in order to dynamic occurs on the time scales of electron moving through the whole system. This is a double exchange model.
Okay, we should stop here. We have now lunch, and let's thank all the speakers.